Hello and welcome. I'm so glad you're here because today we're diving into one of the most fascinating and mark-rich topics in your WJAC A-level physical education course, Health Contributions and Effects of Exercise. That's topic 1.1. Whether you're revising for your written exam or just trying to get your head around why exercise is actually so powerful for the human body, this episode is going to give you everything you need. We're going to cover the key physiological mechanisms, the diseases that exercise helps prevent, the mental health benefits, and crucially, the exact language and terminology that examiners are looking for on your mark scheme. Think of this as a conversation with your most knowledgeable tutor, someone who's seen thousands of exam scripts and knows exactly what gets marks and what doesn't. So grab a pen, maybe pause and rewind when you need to, and let's get into it. Let's start with the big picture. The conditions we're talking about in this topic, coronary heart disease, obesity, type 2 diabetes, and osteoporosis, all share one thing in common. They are what we call hypokinetic diseases. Write that term down right now. Hypokinetic. It literally means caused by insufficient movement. Examiners absolutely love to see this term used correctly in your introduction to any question on this topic. If you open your answer with, "These are hypokinetic diseases caused by physical inactivity," you're already signaling to the examiner that you know your stuff. Now let's work through each condition and how exercise helps. First up, coronary heart disease, or CHD. This is caused by a process called atherosclerosis, where fatty deposits known as plaques build up inside the coronary arteries, narrowing them and restricting blood flow to the heart. Now, be careful here. Atherosclerosis is the plaque buildup. Don't confuse it with arteriosclerosis, which is the hardening of the arterial walls. These are two different things, and mixing them up is one of the most common mistakes I see in exam scripts. So how does exercise help with CHD? There are several mechanisms, and you need to be specific about each one. Regular aerobic exercise causes what we call cardiac hypertrophy. The heart muscle literally grows larger and stronger, particularly the left ventricle. This leads to an increased stroke volume, meaning the heart pumps more blood per beat. As a result, the resting heart rate decreases, a condition called bradycardia, which is actually a sign of a very efficient cardiovascular system. Athletes can have resting heart rates as low as 40 beats per minute, but there's more. Exercise also improves your lipid profile. Specifically, it increases high-density lipoproteins, HDL, which are the good cholesterol, and decreases low-density lipoproteins, LDL, the bad cholesterol. HDL actually helps transport cholesterol away from the artery walls and back to the liver for processing. So by improving your HDL to LDL ratio, exercise directly reduces the risk of atherosclerosis. Examiners will award marks specifically for naming HDL and LDL. Vague answers about reducing cholesterol won't cut it at A level. Exercise also improves arterial elasticity. The walls of the arteries become more flexible, which helps regulate blood pressure. This is important because high blood pressure, hypertension, is a major risk factor for CHD. Now let's talk about obesity. Obesity is defined using body mass index, or BMI. That's weight in kilograms divided by height in meters squared. A BMI over 30 is classified as obese. But here's something important for your exam. You should also acknowledge the limitations of BMI. It doesn't distinguish between muscle mass and fat mass, so a very muscular athlete might technically have a high BMI without being obese. Examiners credit candidates who show this kind of critical awareness. Exercise helps manage obesity through the energy balance equation, energy intake versus energy expenditure. Exercise increases energy expenditure directly, but it also raises your basal metabolic rate, your BMR, the rate at which your body burns calories at rest. This is partly because muscle tissue is more metabolically active than fat tissue. There's also a phenomenon called EPOC, excess post-exercise oxygen consumption, sometimes called the afterburn effect. After intense exercise, your body continues to consume oxygen at an elevated rate for hours, burning additional calories even while you're sitting on the sofa. Make sure you reference BMR and EPOC by name. These are the kinds of specific physiological pathways that earn marks in extended response questions. Moving on to type 2 diabetes, this is absolutely critical. Always specify type 2. Exercise does not cure type 1 diabetes, which is an autoimmune condition. Confusing the two is a very common and costly mistake. Type 2 diabetes develops when cells become resistant to insulin, meaning glucose can't enter cells efficiently and blood sugar levels remain dangerously high. Exercise improves insulin sensitivity through a mechanism involving a protein called GLUT4. During exercise, muscle contractions stimulate the translocation of GLU4 transporters to the cell surface, allowing glucose to enter the muscle cells without needing insulin. Over time, regular exercise increases the number of GLUT4 transporters available, improving overall glucose regulation. If you can reference GLUT4 translocation in your exam answer, you will stand out from the vast majority of candidates. Now let's look at osteoporosis. This is a condition where bone mineral density decreases, making bones weak, brittle, and prone to fracture. The key mechanism here is osteoblastic activity. Osteoblasts are the cells responsible for building new bone tissue. Weight-bearing and high-impact exercise, think running, jumping, resistance training, stimulates osteoblastic activity, increasing bone mineral density over time. This is why it's so important to specify weight-bearing exercise. Swimming, for example, is excellent cardiovascular exercise, but provides less benefit for bone density because the water supports your body weight. Examiners will credit this distinction. Finally, let's talk about mental health benefits. Exercise has powerful effects on psychological well-being, and examiners want you to distinguish between two types of effects. Somatic effects are physiological, things happening in the body. Cognitive effects are psychological, things happening in the mind. Exercise reduces somatic anxiety through mechanisms like reduced muscle tension and lowered heart rate. It reduces cognitive anxiety by stimulating the release of serotonin and endorphins, which improve mood, and by reducing cortisol, the body's primary stress hormone. The reduction in cortisol is particularly important for candidates discussing long-term mental health benefits. And remember, always distinguish between acute effects, which are the immediate responses during and just after exercise, and chronic adaptations, which are the long-term structural and functional changes that occur with regular training. This distinction is explicitly tested on the WJXC mark scheme. Right, let's talk exam technique. This is where marks are won and lost. The number one mistake I see is vague language. Writing exercise makes your heart stronger will not earn marks at A-level. You need to write regular aerobic training leads to cardiac hypertrophy, increasing stroke volume and resulting in bradycardia. Every claim needs a mechanism behind it. Second big mistake, not using the command word correctly. If the question says explain, you must give a reason or mechanism. If it says analyze, you need to break down the components and discuss their individual effects. If it says evaluate, you need to make a judgment, discuss strengths, weaknesses, or limitations. Read the command word before you write a single word of your answer. Third, ignoring the mark allocation. If a question is worth 6 marks, the examiner is looking for roughly 6 distinct marking points. Structure your answer accordingly. Use phrases like furthermore, in addition, and as a result of this to signal that you're developing your argument. Fourth, always link acute effects to chronic adaptations where possible. For example, acutely, exercise increases heart rate to meet oxygen demands. Chronically, this repeated stress leads to cardiac hypertrophy and an increased stroke volume. That kind of paired response demonstrates the depth of understanding that examiners reward with top marks. And fifth, for the assessment objectives on this paper, remember, AO1 is knowledge and understanding, 30%. AO2 is application, 35%. AO3 is analysis and evaluation, 35%. So the majority of marks are for applying and analyzing, not just recalling facts. Don't just list what you know, use it. Okay, quick fire recall time. I'll ask a question, pause for a few seconds, then give the answer. Ready? Question 1. What term describes diseases caused by physical inactivity? Hypokinetic diseases. Question 2. What is the difference between atherosclerosis and arteriosclerosis? Atherosclerosis is plaque buildup in arteries. Arteriosclerosis is hardening of arterial walls. Question 3. What does GLUT4 translocation do? It allows glucose to enter muscle cells without insulin, improving blood sugar regulation in type 2 diabetes. Question 4. What type of exercise best stimulates osteoblastic activity, weight-bearing, or high-impact exercise? Question 5. Name 2 neurotransmitters or hormones released during exercise that improve mental health, serotonin and endorphins. Bonus point for mentioning cortisol reduction. Question 6. What is EPOC and why does it matter for obesity management? Excess post-exercise oxygen consumption, the body continues burning calories at an elevated rate after exercise, contributing to energy expenditure and weight management. How did you do? If you stumbled on any of those, go back and reread that section of your notes. Let's bring it all together. Today, we've covered the 4 main hypokinetic diseases, CHD, obesity, type 2 diabetes, and osteoporosis, and the specific physiological mechanisms by which exercise reduces their risk. We've talked about cardiac hypertrophy, stroke volume, bradycardia, lipid profiles, the energy balance equation, BMR, EPOC, GLUT4 translocation, osteoblastic activity, and the distinction between somatic and cognitive anxiety reduction. The key takeaway for your exam is this: be specific, use the correct terminology, link mechanisms to outcomes, and always distinguish between acute effects and chronic adaptations. You've got this. Keep revising, keep practicing those extended response questions, and remember, every mark you earn in this topic is a mark you've worked hard for. Good luck, and I'll see you in the next episode.